Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Let's get right back to the phones. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. MGM National Harbor Lister Lounge. You can tweet at me as well. It is at N-E-L-L underscore BTP. A lot to get to here surrounding the Burgundy and Gold. It was an eventful day out in Ashburn as the fellas returned to the practice field after squeaking. That was my squeak noise. Squeaking past the New Orleans Saints Sunday in the Big Easy as they won by 1 point. No egg monogamy. Mikey Samer still in good position, right place, right time, as the Saints ran a sprint out for a 2-point conversion to potentially win the football game. It falls harmlessly to the turf, and now your Commanders are 9-5. But clearly, after watching Sunday against New Orleans, you can't feel better about their ability to beat a legit team. That's how I felt leaving Sunday. I thought the quarterback was phenomenal. Yeah, he took 8 sacks. Yeah, he had a couple of misses to Terry McLaurin that probably, you know, drastically changed the outcome of this football game. But every time you watch this kid play, when he's not hurt in dealing with the rib oblique injury, he makes 4 or 5 plays per weekend that make your chin touch your kneecaps. Jaw-dropping. It is that special watching this young man most of the time. And because of how special he is, I will say it till I'm blue in the face. They've got a shot, a puncher's chance, so to speak, against anybody in the National Football League because of how dynamic he is at the quarterback position. My issue is what they have around Jaden Daniels. And if you watch Sunday, Zach Ertz with his best catch of the year, now in the concussion protocol after. And it was as harmless of a play as you'll ever see. So you're now down your top 3 out of your top 4 weapons offensively. That's almost a fourth of your production gone. No Austin Eckler, no Noah Brown, potentially no Zach Ertz Sunday against Philadelphia. And then defensively, for as great as you played in the first half against that hand model, Jake Haener, right? As great as you played against him in the second half, hear that? That's Spencer Rattler rattling at you. He came off the bench and led 4 straight scoring drives. So when you couple the health of the skill group with the defensive woes and add context to this, what would be your answer to this question? As we sit here right now, a couple of days away from Philly, what is more likely, the Commanders missing the playoffs or the Commanders winning a playoff game? Let's go to Frank in Great Falls. What's up, Frank?
Hey. Yeah, I'm with Eric. I might go 99.9% with you, but not all 100. They are much less likely to win a playoff game than to miss the playoffs. Because, I'm with you on that. One player can get it done, but the other 52 on those other squads that are in the NFC hunt right now and the division winners, they would take us a lot and almost any given Sunday. So, but I think his energy was great too, because the fans won the Super Bowl when they lost that old owner. And this is way ahead of schedule.
I agree.
I would take this season all day and twice on Sunday. Right? So we good. It's just a matter of what's next. My point one is I don't want to jinx it on Jaden. I love him. I think you're right. He's spectacular, but you never know. So I don't want to say we got our guy.
Well, that's true. I don't want to speak too soon, but based on the character and the traits, it seems like.
I agree.
Seems like
agree.
We got the right
All
guy. Frank, I appreciate you tapping in as always, brother. Let's go to Matt in Stafford. What up, Matt?
Linnell, great show.
Appreciate you, brother.
And I agree that Jaden Daniels gives any team a chance to win against anybody, anytime. I am concerned about Zach Ertz. And it also hurts that Noah Brown is out as well. Both of those guys are really good players. But I think that Jaden is going to elevate some of these other players. He has that trait where he's a quarterback that can make everybody better.
For sure.
And so to answer your question, I think they have a better chance to win a playoff game because certainly the team is average, but the whole NFC is average. And if you got a guy like Jaden, you got a chance. And sometimes you can springboard off of a ugly loss and go on a run. And who's to say they don't end up 11-5? Who's to say they don't win the division? It could still happen. What do you think, Linnell?
It's possible.
You love this.
It's possible, and I hear you, and you're getting me excited, and my eyebrows are raised, Matt. You have a tendency to do that with these calls. The loss to get you, and you, I think you tapped in that Friday, that Black Friday, where I put a fork in them. The loss against Dallas really broke my trust, and I haven't recovered from it mentally as a fan. It made me question their ability to beat Tennessee. Obviously, they took out the whooping stick on them. But then they played tiddlywinks with the Saints for 59 and a half minutes.
Let me mention one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
The Eagles, you know, something happened to Saquon. A.J. Brown got a hip drop.
His ankle is a real question mark going into Sunday. And Saquon didn't practice today.
I could see the Cowboys upsetting the Eagles somehow. And they might, go on one of those epic collapses like they did last year.
I appreciate the call as always, Matt. Last year, as Matt just alluded to, great call by Matt and Stafford, for one. But as Matt alluded to, last year was one of the most epic collapses I've ever seen. If you're on the line, stay there. 1-800-636-1067. We will continue to discuss what is more likely, the Commanders missing the playoffs or winning a playoff game. But we'll take a quick timeout when we come back. Our pal Eric Flack, WSA9, going to give us the absolute latest, a up-to-the-minute report on what is going on Capitol Hill when it comes to getting the Commanders back at RFK. Eric Flack joins us next. Still moving and grooving along here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. It's the Youngest in Charge Movement, Linnell Willingham, taking you up to 10 o'clock. Right now we go out to the guest hotline, where we find the man, the myth, the legend, as I like to call him, the man all over the Commander's potential return to RFK, Emmy Award-winning chief investigative reporter for our friends at WSA9, our pal Eric Flack. Give him a follow on the X app at Eric Flack TV. Eric, you're not busy at all right now, are you, brother?
Hey, I always got time for you, Linnell. That's all that matters, right?
I was about to say, man, look, I appreciate you clearing out some time in your super, super busy work schedule, my man. Enjoy following your work, It's been a whirlwind, man. For a young guy like myself, Eric, I'm 27 from around this area, born and raised.
Okay.
The idea of the Commanders coming back to RFK, I understand it from talking to my colleagues and taking calls from the listeners, but from your vantage point, before we even get into the logistics of it, like, how massive do you think this would be, one, for the morale of the fan base, and then two, potentially the economy here in the District of Columbia? What are the benefits of the Commanders coming back?
I don't think you can overstate it. You mentioned your age, so I'll throw out mine. I just turned 49. I went to RFK with my father.
Wow.
I saw, you know, Darryl Grant return, you know, tipped balls for touchdowns. I saw Dexter Manley, Joe Theismann, John Riggins, saw us beat the best and, you know, win three Super Bowls coming through that stadium. And I think that those stories have been passed down to fans like yourself. And I think the legend of RFK lives both with the, you know, segment of the fan base that have actually been there and went to games there, and then also to the fan base who have heard about it from their friends, their dads, their brothers, their uncles. And so I think that it almost takes on a mythical proportion. You know, RFK itself was was small and cramped, and the stands would literally shake because they were so unsturdy. But that was when it would get going. But that was the appeal. As far as the economy, I mean, I think DC certainly needs a boost. I think there is a huge need for an injection down there in that corridor. But it depends on who you talk to.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of neighborhoods down there. There's a lot of residential areas down there who, you know, may not necessarily want what a new stadium would bring. And then you're going to have people on the D.C. Council who might even argue there are better ways to infuse economic growth than a new stadium. So I think the economic question comes down to which side of the fence you're on with this deal. But from a nostalgia fan base perspective, I don't think there's any question that it would be absolutely massive.
And I agree with you just based on your reporting and everything that I've heard. Speaking of your reporting, you know, Mayor Bowser seems like, Eric, and correct me if I'm wrong, is at the forefront of this thing, trying to get the team back. Like, she is the politician leading this. We've heard other councilmen on the fan, you know, since the news was announced. And, you know, Bowser, based off your reporting, announced today that they've had preliminary discussions with the Commanders ownership group, letting the team know that they are serious. Put yourself in the Commander's shoes for a second here, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
I have long said, you know, since it was first, you know, made known that it was a possibility that they could potentially get back to RFK, I've always said businessmen are going to be businessmen first. I always thought Washington would take or go where the deal was the best, where the pot was the sweetest, so to speak. Now that DC is seriously a viable option, what type of shot do you give them to create a package that is more enticing than what Westmore and Maryland will bring up?
Linnell, I think you actually hit on what is going to become, assuming this deal doesn't unravel, and I assume we're going to talk about that with the spending bill and all the politics that are going on Capitol Hill. But assuming this deal does not unravel and DC has control of this land, I think you've hit on a really interesting question. I think the question is going to be, what is the hometown discount worth to DC in the eyes of Josh Harris and his partners, Mitch Rale, Mark Ein, all of whom are from here and have talked about going to the games at RFK just like I have. And I've talked to different people. You know, you talk to people on the Maryland side and they think it's laughable that DC is going to get any more than a $50 or $100 million hometown discount. The idea that DC is going to be able to find more than $500 million, yeah, which is what they gave to the Caps and the Wizards and Ted Leonsis and for renovations at Capital One Arena, which they break ground on tomorrow, by the way.
Uh-huh.
The idea that they're going to be able to find more money than that is hard to fathom, because I've done the reporting, I've done the research, and right now they're just kind of out of borrowing power. Now, they've talked about, you know, behind the scenes moving certain business taxes over that are, you know, currently funding Nationals Park. Could you move that over once the bond is paid off, which is fairly soon on Nationals Park? Could you move that over to help fund a Commander Stadium? Yeah, possibly. But, you know, the Maryland can outbid Washington, D.C. I mean, I think, or at least it would seem that Maryland is going to have the ability to outbid Washington, D.C. So the question is going to be, how much will they outbid D.C. by? And will it be enough to make it a difficult decision, if in fact the Commanders have this decision, a difficult decision to pass up the money that Maryland is offering to do what basically the entire fan base wants, and even fans in Maryland want,
right,
which is a return to RFK. And I think that's going to be one of those fascinating parts of this story moving forward.
And what's so interesting about this, Eric, and I've tried to look at it from all different angles. I've done played the morality card, where it's like, well, does it make sense morally for DC to put, you know, millions of dollars in public funding into a sports stadium that where there's really no guarantee on your investment, especially if the team falls off the face of the earth and goes back into that lull of being uncompetitive. There's that. But I look at it from the Commander standpoint, and I think one thing, Eric, that you probably can agree with and the listeners can too, since Josh Harris and company have gotten here, Eric, they've done everything right. It's been all about recapturing this fan base. It's been all about bringing the nostalgia back. They understand what D.C. means, you know, to this fan base, to the community, what RFK means, and playing there, what that means to the fan base and to the community. So I know it's tugging on their heartstrings a little bit. What does this scenario sound like to you, Eric? I look at Josh, Mark Ein, Mitch Rails, guys that are from this area. What a better opportunity. Is there a better opportunity for them to be true stewards of their community, guys that are DMV born and raised, to say, hey, you know what? What about privately funding a Washington Commander stadium? And I know I'm maybe coming out of left field with that, but I can't help but look at the $1.3 billion agreement that Josh Harris's group has with the Sixers, and they are publicly funding that stadium on top of giving a $50 million investment into the city schools, businesses, and neighboring communities. Will we see the Josh Harris group potentially open their wallets up like that here?
I think you will, but I think football stadiums are more expensive than basketball stadiums.
And I think
Josh Harris has acknowledged that. I think he's said that. And I think he knows that, you know, they are very fortunate, and you got a bunch of really well-positioned businessmen who are part of this ownership group financially. But listen, I mean, you know, you go back, SoFi a couple years ago was not $1.9 billion. You know, I think before that, maybe Allegiant, which might have been before or after, I can't remember. But, let me rephrase. Allegiant in Vegas was like $1.9 or $2 billion. SoFi was closer to $5 billion. Mm. So, I mean, and these were a couple years ago. So you're adding for inflation and those things. So you're talking about at least two or probably $3 billion to get this deal done. And the idea, because we know it's going to be domed and all those sorts of things. We know it's going to be 65,000 people so they can get a Super Bowl. I mean, those are the cost of entry. So you know, the idea that they're going to be able to privately fund $2.5 to $3 billion is that would be a big chunk to swallow. And then you got, you know, the infrastructure and that can run the bill way up as well. So, you know, I think they're going to expect, as almost every for SoFi and Stan Kroenke out in L.A., as every one of these deals has, expect some sort of financial public investment in this deal. You know, I think that you may see them put in more money than owners in, say, Nashville, you know,
yes.
Or up in Buffalo, where taxpayers are paying for a lot.
And they're upset about it.
a large chunk, if not all of the arena up there in Buffalo. But to think that it's going to be completely privately funded, like what they're doing in Philadelphia, I think is going to be a long shot. But, you know, I go back to the fact that Mayor Bowser today said, we have had discussions. We've had preliminary discussions. You would think that those discussions have borne some fruit to where the Commanders think they can get this deal done based on the amount of their own sweat equity and political capital they put in on Capitol Hill with Roger Goodell and Josh Harris, Mark Ein, and Mitch Rails going down in person lobbying these lawmakers. Yeah. It's hard to imagine they would have put themselves out there like that without knowing or at least feeling good about the potential to get a deal done with D.C. that the mayor could at least take to the D.C. Council.
Yeah, hopefully. I know the big political part of that is don't bring something to the table that your counterparts are going to laugh at. I look at 21 limited partners, though, Eric, and I'm like, well, they should be able to, you know, privately fund a decent chunk of it. But at the end of the day,
pass a hat? You think they're going to pass a $3 billion hat, Linnell?
About to say, right? Just have people drop it like it's a collection basket on Sundays, man.
Just throw in 500 mil.
You know, nothing much.
Yeah.
The last part of this, Eric, that is really changed over the past 24 hours And once again, make sure you follow Eric's work at WSA9.com. Just does a tremendous job being all over this stuff and helps, you know, not as smart guys like myself stay up to speed with this.
You
reported earlier, you know, about the possibility of Congress scrapping the budget bill. And I know a lot of Republican, you know, lawmakers and leaders are pushing towards that. Where do we currently stand in terms of, you know, them actually getting control?
Yeah, we can't do anything with this RFK bill easy, can we? Late tonight, Elon Musk in his new cabinet role as head of the fight against government inefficiency has really throughout the day come out hard against this budget deal, which, as most congressional budgets does, adds in a lot of extra spending outside of just keeping the lights on for the government, includes things like rebuilding the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, which collapsed earlier this year, like aid disaster for farmers, a lot of seemingly good things, but it's outside the scope of federal spending. And the RFK bill doesn't include any specific money onto the tab, so to speak, but it is wrapped up in all these other bills that do. And Elon Musk has called for the bill to be scrapped. Donald Trump, president-elect, has come out and not necessarily tonight said you got to scrap the bill, but said you need to stand up to the other party, which is Democrats, because they accused the Democrats of adding a whole bunch of this spending in. And I think, you know, we're going to see what happens. If they scrap the bill, it is bad news because that means they start over again. And RFK is one of these additions, these attachments that are on the outside looking in that would be have to add it in to the new bill, which has to be, you know, put together in short order if they're going to keep the lights on. The government runs out of money at midnight on Friday. And so the idea of shutting down the government and sending federal workers home without paychecks before Christmas isn't something that seemingly on the surface makes a lot of sense. But politics are really, really unpredictable right now. So I think everybody's watching that bill to see what happens, because if it gets serious with them scrapping this bill or somehow throwing it out, that really kind of throws this whole RFK thing back into limbo once again.
Our guy Grant Paulson tweeted this about 20 minutes ago. I agree completely. What is harder or more difficult, Eric Flack, landing on Mars or getting a RFK deal through the finish line, man? It has been messy.
I mean, they're putting rockets seemingly into space left and right. So I might take, finish line with the RFK bill. Not sure.
Eric, appreciate you as always, my friend. We will continue to follow your work for the latest, my pal.
All right. Later, man. Have a good night, Leno.
That is Eric Flack, one of the absolute best. Make sure you give him a follow on the X app at Eric Flack TV, Emmy Award-winning chief investigative reporter for WSA9, giving you the latest on what is going on a potential commander's return to RFK. We will stay on the guest hotline. Other side of this break, our old pal Grant Paulson. As if 4.5 hours weren't enough, you get more Grant Paulson coming up next. He joins me to talk a little bit of RFK as well as answering the question I asked you all a moment ago. What is more likely, the Commanders missing the postseason or winning a playoff game? That's next. They're on the Fan. 1-800-636-1067 is the number on the MGM National Harbor Lister Lounge. You can tweet at me as well. It is at NELL_BCP. Big, big thank you to our guy Eric Flack of WSA9.com. Or excuse me. Yeah, WSA9.com and WSA9. On the TV side, their chief investigative reporter. He's been all over a Commander's potential return to RFK, sorting through all the political hurdles that have to be jumped over. I appreciate Eric joining us. If you missed any of that conversation, download the always free Odyssey app. Use the Odyssey Rewind feature. Go back to 740. Hear my conversation with Eric Flack. What I want to get back into now is what we started off with at the top of the show. We got plenty of reaction to it. You can tweet at me again. It's at NELL_BCP. Two-parter for you here. Let's keep context, right? with all of this. The Commanders right now are 9-5, control their own playoff destiny through the final 3 weeks. They've found their long-term answer at quarterback, it seems. They've got tremendous organizational structure when you talk about ownership, head coach, GM, all being on the same page. The coaching staff's pretty damn good. And they're ahead of schedule in their rebuild. So no matter what happens the rest of the way here, there is nothing unless, and let me knock on wood with this, the only thing that could derail my thoughts about this team is if some catastrophic injury happens at the quarterback position before season's end. We all know you got to keep our fingers crossed with that one.
Why'd you even say that, man?
Oh,
why'd you put those words out there?
I am sitting in the seat of Johnny Cakes Allville as well, so.
Oh.
Who knows what happens with the
All right, well, hey, if it happens, you guys know who to blame, at N-E-L-L yeah, underscore B-T-P
no.
on Twitter.
Yeah, I got to give out all scenarios here. But all in all, like, they're in a really good spot. But when you look at the 2024 Commanders for exactly what they are, that is this team and their 9-5 record, with three games left to go, based on how they played against New Orleans, based on everything you know about this team, strengths, weaknesses, the whole nine. As we sit here with 3 weeks left, what is more likely? The Commanders missing the postseason in its entirety or winning a postseason game? And then the two-parter for you here, add some context to it. Your bigger concern right now, Washington's defensive woes or the health of the skill position group. 1-800-636-1067. KO from the foe. What up, KO?
What's up, fellas? It's not KO, it's Co, man. It's Co from the foe.
It's Co from the foe. I dig it, baby. It's all good.
Hey, so Lanier, that question that you asked, man, that's like a half glass, a glass half full, half empty, brother. Because you are correct. Who can we beat in the NFC playoffs? Probably nobody. But we would not lose all three of our games. This team, like you said, we got the quarterback, we got the coach, we got the structure for us not to fall apart, for us to make the playoffs. So it's how you look at the question, Linnell. And like Matt from Stafford, he said that maybe that Philly has a downfall and maybe Dallas can beat them. But damn, Matt, what about us? We play them this week. So, I mean, if he's thinking like that, then maybe we can have a shot at him. So, I mean, it's a 50-50 question in there.
And I understand it. I understand it, but Cole, let me ask you this, bro. Based off of, and just look at last week in a vacuum, based off the way they played last week, you feel better or worse about their chances of winning a
playoff
game?
Man, I'm moving on to this week, man. It's a week-by-week game. It's a week-by-week lead. I mean, just look at Philly, how they played 2 weeks ago. They came out and shut Pittsburgh down. This week, Pittsburgh looked like they ain't know what to do, but watch how they come out against Baltimore this week.
For sure.
It's week by week, Linnell. You know that. You've been watching football all this time. It's week by week, man. We got to see how we play next week. But like you say, the only team I think we could beat in the NFC playoffs was the Seahawks. But Geno got hurt. Looks like Rams going to take control of that. I don't think we can beat anybody in the NFC playoffs right now. But we got a shot, like you said. I don't see us losing all three of our games. I see us making it a nail.
But here's the thing. You don't have to lose all three to miss the postseason.
I also think we could beat the Rams.
We're going to beat Michael Penix.
That's the one that scares me the most.
I don't know about this week. I don't know about this week here. Uh-huh. We got to see. We got, like you said, we got a puncher's chance. From the quarterback we got a puncher's chance. We got a good coach. We got to see how it go, man.
I understand.
This is week-by-week lead. But we're above average team as well.
Uh-oh, you know, so you must have been listening 70, early. Huh?
We're about a 75. We're about a 75, Linnell.
For sure.
I mean, let's really be honest.
Let's be honest. I did the exercise earlier.
And it's because of all the things that you named, the quarterback, the coach, the structure, yada, yada, this. So it's 50-50, man. It's how you look at the glass, sir.
For sure. Cole, I appreciate you as always, brother. 1-800-636-1067. He must have been listening to a little windbaggery on a Wednesday over on our sister station, Team 980. I mean, me and Chris Russell damn near tore the studio apart trying to determine whether or not.
That's every windbag Wednesday, let's be honest.
It's kind of the point. But I just, It's fascinating. And I told the story, Max, and I've told you this story. You've helped me move out of my apartment. We've gotten to know each other. I bleed this stuff. People have this narrative about me that I am some hater. I tell the story all the damn time. The way Linnell Willingham was raised throughout his high school career, I'm a product of Montgomery County Public Schools, Magruder High School stand-up. The way MCPS work, and I'm 27 now, so y'all make sure y'all really listening to what a brother is saying. In 10th grade, my sophomore year, man, you know sophomore year when you got to take geometry for the first time. Linnell, good with numbers, he's not good with shapes. So as a diehard Commanders fan, the rule in my house was you get a grade lower than a C on your report card. You can come home with straight C's. You wouldn't be punished. You get a grade lower than a C on your report card, you punish to the next report card. And if you're a product of MCPS, you know that's 9 damn weeks. That's 9 weeks. That's a long, long time. And I ain't got one of these 2024 type punishments. I know there's some young parents out there that listen. You take the iPad away. You take the TV away. But they get to go outside and play with their friends. The hell with all of that. The hell with all of that. Where things currently stand with me, or where things stood with me, is that when I was on punishment, man, in 10th grade, no phone, no TV. You damn sure ain't going outside. And you better not really be leaving your room unless you're getting something to eat or going to the bathroom. That's just how it was, man. It's a lot of y'all that listen from the old school, see, I know how that gets down, right? The way that this worked for me, and why I became such a diehard fan, is once I was on punishment, I'm like, bro, I can't watch the Redskins game. What do you mean I can't watch the Redskins game? So my aunt and uncle would go down to my grandfather's house to watch the game every Sunday. And if we were in that 1 o'clock window, you bet your ass, I had two locks on my apartment home that I grew up in, top lock and bottom lock. As soon as they would leave, I would flip the channel. First of all, I'd write down whatever channel the TV was on. And then I would have that as the last button on the remote. And then I'm watching the Commanders game. And maybe my aunt may come home. You know what I'm doing? Cutting the TV off. As soon as I hear that top lock, ka-chink, I'm running my ass back in my room, hitting the last button on the TV. I risk an ass whooping as a high school kid to watch this team. So don't you all try and tell me that I'm negative about the team or I'm not a fan. I bleed it. But I got to be objective as well, man. From what you've seen from this team through 15 weeks, ain't no way in hell you think that they're going to go win a playoff game. Like I said, they got a puncher's chance because of the quarterback, but if we're being realistic, if you had to put some coin on it, you're probably not going to say that, hey, this is a playoff team. You're just not. But what is more likely as we sit here right now? The Commanders missing the playoffs or winning a playoff game? And to add on to that, bigger concern, defensive woes or the health of this skill group? Let's go to Mello in Oxon Hill. What's going on, Mello?
Oh, what's up, man? Big fan of the show.
Appreciate you, brother.
So, I was doing a little research here, man, and I'm looking at the schedules. So, Commanders got a good shot to make the playoffs. You know, they got one on the Seahawks and the Rams, and they got to play each other, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So, also, the Falcons. So, that's the big one right there. If they can pull that out, they're in there. But then they got Dallas at the end of the year. I already chalked up the loss to Philly. But they play Dallas at the end of the year. That could be going to the playoffs. So I think they got a better chance of making the playoffs and winning the game versus not making it.
It's interesting. Look, you're entitled to your opinion, Melo. I appreciate the call as always. I just don't – it's tough for me to – it's tough to sell the whole winning a playoff game thing to me. Because the one thing I look at is this team's most glaring weakness is their inability to consistently stop the run. And no matter who they get matched up with in the postseason, all of those teams have prominent run games. We'll go out to the guest hotline where we find our pal Grant Paulson. As if 4.5 hours wasn't enough, we give you some more GP, the host of Grant Danny weekdays, 2 to 6:30 right here on The Fan. Grant, we're talking about what you and Danny were discussing at the tail end of G&D today. What is more likely, the Commanders missing the playoffs or winning a playoff game? Grant, let me start off with this before you get to the question. And I know how you feel before I ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I believe that, look, even if they do collapse here down the stretch, would I be disappointed? Obviously, as a competitive fan, yes, but it would not cloud my view of this group looking forward. What would it do for you?
Well, I've already chalked this season up largely as a gigantic win,
yes.
like in the grand scheme of things from 10,000 feet up, right? It looks to me like you got a real good chance to have found your quarterback. You know, it's not like I worry in any way about Daniels moving forward, but I've just been around the block long enough to not speak, you know, in finality this early in the process. Right. But, yeah, I feel really good about Daniels and where they're headed at quarterback for the long term. Maybe found your answer for many, many years. The hiring of Dan Quinn, which I was skeptical of initially, looks like a success as well. He's done a really, really good job with his staff. You know, you can pick nits on kind of philosophy and big picture stuff over time. And I'm still curious to see what happens with Cliff Kingsbury in the next year or two and, yeah. and what happens thereafter as a staff. But I think, you know, you got to feel great about your GM. I think you got to feel great about your quarterback. And you could even feel good about your head coach probably right now. So, you know, those are the pillars of the organization, ownership, GM, head coach, QB, those four areas. And all of them right now are getting really good marks. So that's the kind of view of this season. Now, if they were to collapse and miss the playoffs, I could still simultaneously be ultra disappointed and angry and chalk it up as a you know pretty catastrophic collapse as it was. Yeah. But it doesn't change that at, let's say, 9-8 at that point or 10-7 and missing out. You know, if that were to happen, that the year was still a success. So I think both things can be true.
I agree with you 100%, GP. And like you said, you've been around the block. You've seen this before. Covering Robert as closely as you did in 2012, put the personality stuff to the side. Clearly, you feel as if Jaden is a better passer, processor, etc., right? And clearly has, even if he does suffer an injury the way that Robert does, do you have the type of confidence that, hey, this kid will be able to function if they put pieces around him as a traditional drop back passer?
I would say yes to that for sure. I mean, the thing that's impressed me so much about Daniel since really the first times I saw him at training camp and you were out there mm-hmm. is the touch, the accuracy, the ability to keep the ball out of harm's way. And he just doesn't really give the defense many chances to get their hands on the football, which is so critical in this league. And for a young quarterback, it's pretty remarkable, actually, you know, how minimally the opponent has a chance to turn Washington over based on Daniels' decisions. He doesn't really get fooled. He doesn't try to force the ball into you know, small windows. So that's one of those things that just generally as a rookie over the course of a 17-game season, 10, 12 times, you just make a terrible decision. And we've seen two or three of those this year, tops. I mean, just top of my head in terms of, like, throws where you go, well, why didn't you see that guy? What were you thinking? It just hasn't happened. Yeah. So that's impressive. And then the touch and the accuracy and the poise and the ball placement, some of those things throwing the football are legit. Now, I would say that with Griffin, I think we saw a lot of those things as well. And I was ultra impressed in his rookie year with what they were asking him to do and how much he excelled. But they split the field in half a lot with, mm-hmm. you know, the Kyle Shanahan design. I thought they're, you know, in terms of like schemed up number one yards per play that year, 2012, number one passing yards per play. I think it was, you know, the pendulum was swung a little bit more toward like the Kyle Shanahan design than just let's make plays in the pocket. Whereas I think Daniels has done a little bit more throwing the football from the pocket in a way that isn't schemed up. But I still think that's a huge part of what they've done.
Yes.
Like, if you look back at this week against the Saints, just as an example, and this is not to take anything away from Daniels, who I thought was awesome, particularly with his feet on three pretty terrific plays, just an elite game from him as a playmaker on the ground. But, you know, in that game, he's like 20 of 26, whatever it was, a couple hundred yards. Like, there were a couple of tremendous throws when you go back and look, like really upper echelon, strong, small window throws. But it's mostly, you know, just in control, open guys. And I give Cliff Kingsbury a lot of credit for that. Like, it's, you know, a lot of the time you watch their game and he's 17 of 22 and he may have a big time throw or one or two throws that the average quarterback doesn't make. But by and large, it's, you know, whether it's pick your guy, Sam Darnold or, you know, fill in the blank, they're going to be moving the football with that scheme, that offense, those looks. Right. So for me, it's can he make the two or three or four plays a game that puts you over the top? A lot of guys can make a lot of the throws that Cliff Kingsbury is designing and getting them open with. But what about the 3rd-and-14 scramble for 25?
Right,
like,
yeah.
That's the secret sauce. What about the 4th-and-1 that if your quarterback is Derek Carr, just as an example, or Spencer Rattler, you're punting?
Yeah.
Instead, Dan Quinn in minus territory is going, I got Jaden Daniels, dude. I got five on it. And he's just going to, like, you know, snap, jump over the pile, first down. Like, that kind of stuff's crazy. So my confidence in where they're at with him is largely based on, like, the work he puts in.
Yes.
How good it, you know, it seems like how good he wants to be. Like, that kind of stuff where people are in my ear going, you wouldn't believe, like, the grind of this kid. Like, that's how you become a great quarterback. And then you add to that, obviously, that he's 99th percentile all-world athlete, which doesn't hurt.
Does not hurt at all, GP. Joined right now by Grant Paulson, host of Grant and Danny Weekdays, 2 to 6:30 right here on The Fan, discussing all things burgundy and gold. Grant, something else I actually meant to tap you on the shoulder about before you walked out today, my brother. With Zach Ertz, they listed him today as rest/concussion. I would be a little bit surprised if he was able to clear the protocol by Sunday, but anything's possible. You mentioned it, and I agree with you 100% when you were doing the show. Washington is now going into Sunday, the most pivotal game of the season, without three of their top four pass-catching targets. You flip over to the defensive side of the football, albeit a limited practice day. Jeremy Chinn also in the concussion protocol. When you look at this thing big picture, what concerns you more? The defensive woes that we saw in the second half against New Orleans, where, you know, Rattler comes out and leads four straight scoring drives, or the health of this skill position group?
Well, I think that's kind of matchup dependent, right? And because Philadelphia's got such good weapons and a prolific offense, I would say in this particular matchup, I'm a little more worried about the defense.
Yeah.
Although I would point out, you know, the Eagles have the top-ranked defense in the league since their bye now over a couple months. So it's not like they're, you know, a walk in the park on that side of the ball either. But it's a problem. You know, they got guys dropping like flies. They've been really lucky. Now, I will say, I think Ertz, you know, might be a week. Hopefully he plays this weekend. We don't know. But yeah. I don't think that's like a rest of the year thing.
Okay.
I am worried about Eckler. He was on the show yesterday. I don't know if you heard that. But mm-hmm. I've got reservations that we see him again. Just personally listening to him talk on the show this season. I'm not sure that he plays end of the year, playoffs, whatever. Noah Brown's obviously out for the year. So two of those three that you're referencing, I mean, they're not coming back. And so that means, based on what we saw this week, you know, more De'Ami Brown, more Jamison Crowder. I got nothing against those guys, but you want them pushed down the depth chart a little bit. You don't want you know, that being kind of your number two option in the wide receiving game. And then with Ertz, he's really the only tight end that's had any impact on the offense at all as a receiver. John Bates is a, you know, a blocker. I want to see more Bents in it. I think we're going to this week.
I hope so, GP.
But it is a problem. I mean, it's legit. It's like Terry McLaurin and you know, your running game, and Jaden Daniels making a play with his feet. That's kind of the extent of their offense at this point. Like, where is your playmaking coming from if it's not McLaurin in the passing game? I don't think they had that.
Yeah, and it's a tough pill to swallow. It's also, you know, the byproduct of being in year one of a rebuild. You can only bring in so much talent into the organization. Ron left this place in a bad spot, if I'm being polite about it. But I agree with what you say. You know, I think it is matchup dependent. But I look at, to me, the defense, as long as, like you said, as long as Five's out there, I think offensively they got a shot to hang around with anybody. I think he's just that special of a cat at the
right
position.
Right, he can get you out of some bad by making a play.
Exactly. But on defense, man, I was hot, Grant, watching Spencer Rattler come off the bench, our backup rookie, and just walk the football up and down the field. Kendre Miller gets going on the ground. I'm like, who? This is my main reason why I have a problem, you know, flat out saying, yeah, I think they'll go win a playoff game or even make the playoffs. They are just the epitome of inconsistency right now, and I think that's okay because we're in year one of a rebuild. But when you look at it and take the 10,000-foot view away, they're a middling NFC team that, you know, honestly, to me, looks like they're fading.
Well, I mean, I think that's reasonable. Like, fans don't want to hear that, and I'm sure we'll cover their ears or get angry. But look, two of their last three games are a loss to the Cowboys and a near loss to the Saints based on them not getting a two-point conversion, right, and Washington getting a break on that final play. Or else you've lost two games to inferior teams that you can't lose down the stretch. Now, the outlier is that they blew out the Titans.
Right.
But I would say that was their only impressive, like really legitimate, strong outing of the last seven games that they played, going all the way back to the Bears, maybe Hail Mary game the week before that, the Carolina Panthers. Like, they have not played a complete strong football game, other than maybe the blowout win over the Titans, since the early part of the year. So it's been a long time since they were playing at that, you know, 7-2, we're talking NFC Championship caliber level. That was a while ago. But to your point, I think I agree with you on the defense. Certainly the fourth quarter was bad. They were great in the first half. They made Jake Hanner look like he didn't belong. I mean, he's a handsome gentleman. He's not a particularly quality quarterback.
No.
But they didn't allow a point for the third time this season in the first quarter.
Yeah.
I thought through three quarters, you know, they only gave up the trick play touchdown, and it was basically a two-play sequence for 50 yards. So it wasn't like they got beat or walked, right, you know, right down the field on Washington. And that was through three quarters. You basically had a couple bad plays. I'll take that every time. But you're right. They didn't have an answer in the fourth quarter. That was discouraging. I thought they kind of ran out of gas. I think some of that can be, though, like just momentum and situation where you've got to play. I don't want to use prevent, but you're kind of playing soft and the guy's picking you apart. And they got two possessions and it just kind of all unfolded on. They kicked that field goal from 54 and it's true. Or
what did you think about that, Grant? I didn't get to ask you about that. I hated the decision when you add the context of your defense and giving up three straight scoring drives.
So the only reason I actually hated the decision, I guess twofold. First of all, I had no problem with it because generally I defer to be aggressive. We're here to win. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not here to make a play later and hope to hang on.
Right.
And so that is are we winning right now or are we trying to make a play later to win? And generally I defer to the A, not B. But I just think the context of that game and that situation, the kicker is the guy who's been here for 2 hours, and Greg Joseph, who – with all due respect to him and hope he's having a baby tonight like he was supposed to. But, right. I mean, he's not in the brotherhood. He's just kind of a hired gun for a week. You know what I mean? Like, he's not one of the – he's not, you know, Mr. Commander.
Right.
So, like, I'm not putting the game on his leg, respectfully, for, like, his fourth team he's kicked on this year or whatever it is. That's number one. He also missed a kick, everybody forgets, earlier in the quarter or in the half, rather. Now, and I got a reprieve because it was triple zeros at the end of the third quarter. But he missed a kick closer than that, and so it's not like he was feeling great, I can't imagine. So, like, that was weird to me.
Yes.
And then the other thing is, you're either going to let Spencer Rattler potentially go half the field from midfield at the 44, or he's got to go 90 with, like, one timeout.
And that was my thing. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, it's just like, that's a pretty easy decision to make. Now, if he would have made the field goal, Dan Quinn's a genius, right? But I didn't hate it. I didn't have a big problem with it, but I think I probably would have not – kick that field goal.
Gut feel right now, Grant, as we'll let you go. I appreciate you giving me some time, brother. You are the man for this. Love chopping it up with you. And a little scheduling note, we'll actually be chopping it up for a whole 4.5 hours coming up here real soon. I'm excited for that.
Let's go.
Grant, gut feel right now, they make the playoffs or not here with three games left?
Yeah, they're going to make the playoffs. I think they're going to beat Atlanta, which means they'll clinch.
Yeah, I can't wait for Monday. I don't think I'm on the schedule. I'm coming in Monday just to talk with you guys because that's gonna be crazy.
Yeah, that game's gonna be fascinating. But so first off, I think I actually have them playing Philly really tight this weekend.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not gonna pick them to win, but I would not be surprised if you told me right now they either lose by two touchdowns or they win the game. I think they win the game.
Okay,
I think it's gonna be close. Okay. So let's say they lose to Philly. Philly's still got a lot to play for, obviously trying to wrap up the division, number one seed, still in the balance, all those things. Let's say Philly wins. I think they win their final two. I think they get to 11-6. I've had them at 10-7, saying 2-2 down the stretch the whole time. Mm-hmm. But if they can get the Atlanta game, which I think they will, I think they get to 11, beat Dallas in week 18, Cowboys packing it in, and ready to go golfing. But, you know, you want them to go in with some style points, with some energy and kind of a pizzazz to it. You don't want it to be like a Ron Rivera year one, you got in, .. right?
For sure.
And I do think they'll earn their way in with the win over the Falcons, which will be Michael Penix's second start ever at this point.
It's going to be interesting, Grant. I am nervous as hell, but this is what we signed up for, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your evening, my man. I will see you tomorrow. Appreciate you giving us some time.
All right. Appreciate you, man. See ya.
That is the boy, Grant Paulson, host of Grant Danny. Catch him weekdays, 2 to 6:30 right here on The Fan. Always enjoy chopping it up with GP. We'll run through some calls here real quick. 1-800-636-1067. We do have to break. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, more of your calls. Plus, we'll be joined by Odyssey NFL insider Jason Lock and four. All that and more next here on The Fan.